Coming up next, another edition of Reaching Out with Gregory Floyd, president of Teamsters Local 237.
Welcome to another edition of Reaching Out. I'm Gregory Floyd, president of Local 237 Teamsters. With me, a very special guest, once again, Congressman Daniel Goldman. He represents the New York's 10th Congressional District, which covers parts of Brooklyn and Manhattan. Before becoming a congressman in 22, Daniel Goldman served as lead counsel for the impeachment investigation of President Trump for abusing his office for personal interests regarding Ukraine. Congressman Daniel Goldman and his wife, Corinne, live in Lower Manhattan, where they raised their 5 children. Welcome back to Reaching Out, Congressman.
Thanks so much for having me, Greg. Good to see you.
Good to see you also. So let's jump right in. The GOP is currently debating their massive bill for billionaires in the Senate, known as the Big Beautiful Bill, that's going to take money away from the rest of the 99%. Can you discuss how it will impact your district in New York City specifically?
Yeah, it's going to devastate so many people in New York City, in my district. The Medicaid cuts are going to cause millions of people around the country to lose their health care. Certainly well over 50,000 in my district. And I think what's important is certainly over 50,000 in most districts in New York, including Republican districts. The changes to SNAP, the nutrition assistance, are absurd and will be devastating. I mean, as an example, one of the ways that these Republicans are trying to frame everything is that they're just making sure that people are eligible for all of these for these benefits. Well, what they did in SNAP, as an example, is they changed the definition of a dependent to a child 7 or under. So if you have an 8-year-old child, that is not a dependent. So one of the requirements is that if you're an able-bodied adult and you have no dependents, you have to work. Well, if you have an 8-year-old, a 10-year-old, an 11-year-old, I have 5 kids, those are dependents. And the idea of cutting some arbitrary age at 7 is absurd, but it will have an impact on 700,000 New Yorkers. And so it's things like that that they are doing, where they're trying to gaslight the American people to think that this is waste, fraud, and abuse. This is just eligibility, that this is about undocumented immigrants. It's all nonsense. It's all lies. Undocumented immigrants are not eligible for federal Medicaid. So that's just bogus. And it's all just their effort to essentially cut services that millions of New Yorkers rely on, hundreds of millions, really, of Americans rely on, and that are sort of the basic human dignity that we should guarantee in a country that is the wealthiest in the world, that is a democracy. And also, many of these programs are the ones that give people a little boost to be able to seek the American dream, to join the middle class. And by taking them away, they're going to punish the most vulnerable, and all for tax cuts for billionaires, because this bill is actually going to increase the deficit, Greg, by about $2.5 trillion. And that's because their tax cuts for the wealthy and the billionaires and big corporations are so expensive that even though they're cutting well over $1 trillion of government programs, they're adding so much to the deficit because of the tax cuts for the billionaires. So their priorities backwards, but are a reflection of where they are. And I think what's really important for everybody is to understand that do not listen to what they say, pay attention to what they do. Because what they say sounds great, but it's all lies. What they are doing is what we need to focus on.
Well, this is not new. They did this in the first term, right?
Exactly.
First President Trump term.
That's exactly right.
Just a repeated the same playbook. And we know what that led to.
They repeated the same playbook. In that case, they mostly just lowered taxes for the super wealthy. And the 2017 tax cuts, 83% of the benefits for those tax cuts went to the wealthiest 1%. And what they're trying to do now is extend them and continue them. And it's now costlier and costlier to do so. So their tax cuts themselves are going to add close to $5 trillion to the deficit. And let's be real, you know, they talk a lot about the deficit when there's a Democratic president. But the deficit is a real issue. It is now our interest payments alone on the deficit are larger than our entire annual budget on the Defense Department. It's close to $1 trillion now on an annual interest payment, which is going to be completely untenable very shortly. And now would be an opportunity to lower the deficit if they kept true to their word. But of course, they're doing the opposite just to help out their billionaire buddies.
Help them out as if they needed help. It's, you know, growing up, we used to idolize Robin Hood, steal from the rich and give to the poor. This is in reverse. I mean, I've never, ever thought I would be looking at billionaires stealing from the poor.
It's shocking. And it's the exact opposite of who we should be as a country, as a government, as the leader of the free world, of the economic leader, the geopolitical leader, the moral leader. All of that is falling by the wayside with somebody in the Oval Office who is all out for himself, who is trying to use the office of the presidency to grift, to make money, to abuse his power and leverage, not only to help himself and his buddies, but also to get revenge and retribution against his enemies. We're in a real, real pickle right now, because it's not just an attack on vulnerable Americans. It's an attack on our basic values and the foundations of our democracy.
So listen, how has Trump's tariffs impacted your district and constituents?
Well, what we're seeing in my district and around the country, and especially with small businesses, is these tariffs are absolutely devastating. I represent Manhattan's Chinatown and Brooklyn's Chinatown and Sunset Park, where small businesses that rely on imports from China are very common. And these are businesses that have very slim margins. They cannot afford to pay a lot more for their goods. Their customers cannot afford to pay more if they raise prices. And so some of these small businesses are starting to go out of business or dramatically losing business. And the costs for everybody are going up. And so, you know, we were promised that he was going to lower costs, that he was going to lower inflation, and he's doing the exact opposite. And so the tariffs, let's be real, are just simply a tax paid by the American consumer. He can try to dress it up any way he wants, but ultimately the way that it works is that companies pay the tariff, then companies pass through those expenses to the consumer, to the customer. It's very simple. And that's what's happening. So costs are going up, and he's raising costs through these random and arbitrary tariffs that have no point. It does not seem to have an objective that is a goal or strategy. It's just literally, I don't know, kind of like a pissing contest between Trump and the rest of the world. And so it's completely arbitrary. So you have no idea what to expect, which is causing all sorts of businesses to clam up, to stop spending so that they can be prepared for whatever unpredictable thing Donald Trump is going to do next. That means that companies are going to shrink and people are going to lose more jobs. And costs are going to go up while he's cutting benefits for millions of Americans. So it's a 1-2-3 punch that is going to crush the American economy.
You're listening to Reaching Out. I'm Gregory Floyd, president of Local 237 Teamsters. With me, very special guest once again, Congressman Daniel Goldman. How has Trump attacked unions in recent months?
I'm glad you asked me this, Greg, because this is a huge concern of mine. And what Donald Trump has basically tried to do is essentially nullify collective bargaining agreements or aspects of collective bargaining agreements for the federal public unions, federal government, and some of the public employee unions. I'll give you one example. In the EPA employees CBA, for 20 years, they have had in their CBA the option of remote work for a certain number of days, which is something they obviously negotiated and is important to them long before COVID, long before, you know, we had this new need for remote work. Donald Trump issued an executive order essentially getting rid of all remote work for federal employees. Well, that's a violation of their CBA, but he does not care. And he is doing that with TSA. He's doing that with so many different government employees that this is a massive problem for labor generally and for unions very broadly, including yours, including all of the private unions. Because think about a scenario where the president of the United States is not honoring collective bargaining agreements. If the president is not honoring them and he gets away with it, then every employer is going to say, I don't like this part of the CBA. I'm just not going to follow it. The president's not following it. And so I think we're in a real dire situation for labor movement and unions generally, that there have been so many hard-earned rights that unions have been able to achieve and gain for so many Americans to really build the middle class. And that's what the unions do. And the idea that Donald Trump could just decide, pick and choose what aspects of a bargaining agreement he wants to follow, it jeopardizes really the basic foundations of all unions around the country.
Yeah, you make a valid point. You recently confronted masked ICE agents trying to detain immigrants in the federal building that houses your district office. What did you say?
Well, I saw a bunch of plainclothes ICE agents in the lobby of my federal building wearing masks and arresting immigrants who were coming down from immigration court. These are people who have ongoing removal cases, deportation cases, many of whom had filed asylum claims. And remember, asylum is a lawful pathway to come into this country. Our asylum process is backlogged, it's overloaded, it takes way too long, and we certainly need to fix that, which, by the way, the bipartisan immigration bill from last year that Donald Trump submarined would have done. But this is the proper procedures that our immigration law requires. And these people are coming to court for status updates, nothing major. The Department of Homeland Security is dismissing their own case against these immigrants, which then voids any asylum claim. So they walk out of the courtroom thinking that their deportation proceeding has been dismissed. And that's a good thing for them if they can remain here. The next thing they know, they go down the elevator and they're arrested and they're put into expedited removal, which is a different authority to deport somebody with very few rights and in a very rushed, expedited fashion. And It is the exact opposite of what Donald Trump promised the American people, which is that he was going to go after convicted criminals and deport convicted criminals who have violated our law, who have violated the social contract, who have taken advantage of an opportunity they had to be here. And I agree, we should, convicted criminals should be, who are not lawfully here, should be deported. But these are people on the exact other side of the spectrum who are actually doing everything the right way, who are following the rules, who are showing up to court, who are following the immigration law. And they're getting tricked and punished because they're doing things the right way. And it's problematic on so many different levels. It's problematic for them, of course, and to be deceived and tricked. But think about the message that it sends to every other immigrant. They're going to be incentivized not to follow the proper procedures, to go further underground, to go under the radar, which is going to increase disorder. It's going to increase crime. It's going to decrease public safety. And so all the things that they claim they want to do are undermined just because they want to increase the number of deportations. And this is the easiest way for them to do it because these people have to come to court. It is un-American. It is undemocratic. And it's really depraved. It's not who our values are, a country that is built on immigrants seeking the American dream. So many of your members, I know, feel that as well. And it's really, really disheartening. And then to add a layer to that of these agents wearing masks as if they are, you know, to terrorize and instill fear in these people is shameful. It's really shameful.
This is where we are. It's sad. Did you want to say anything else about the Trump administration before we switch gears to something else?
Look, I mean, the one thing I would just urge everybody to pay attention to, and it doesn't affect our pocketbooks right now in the immediate term, but I'm very concerned about it. You know, somebody who led the first impeachment investigation against Donald Trump and ran for Congress in part because I wanted to make sure we continue to have our democracy and that we have this great country that so many of us love so much and have benefited from so much. He is methodically attacking our democracy. He is trying to eliminate every form of accountability to pave the way for him to completely usurp all power. And we can't be blind to it. And we have to recognize that this is a coordinated effort. It is a premeditated, methodical strategy to eliminate all forms of accountability, which is the first step in the authoritarian playbook. And so right now we're focused on this bill and making sure that putting as much pressure as possible on the Republicans not to cave to Donald Trump and vote in his favor rather than for their constituents. And we'll keep pushing and fighting that battle. But on the parallel track and on the same trajectory is his effort to completely undermine the foundations of our country. And we need to be aware of that and we need to confront it.
So we're in NBA playoff season.
Oh, yes, we are.
And I was watching game 3 where the Knicks won. And at the end of the game, they panned a young man. And I said, hey, I know who that is. But it can't be. I said, that's Congressman Daniel Goldman there in Indiana representing the New York Knicks. Absolutely. So I did a little research and I found out it was you.
Yep.
So I have a story to tell you before I asked you questions about the Knicks, my favorite team. In 1972, November, my father took me to my first Knicks game, my brother and I. We had seats in the garden. I remember going way up, and I said, when are we going to stop going up? When are we going to stop going up? We were in the next to the last row in the Madison Square Garden before it got renovated. I never sat so high in my life. So we're in this seat, and for it looked like an eternity, we're just sitting there, and I don't know what's going on. You know, basketball is for a first game. I don't know what's going on. But all of a sudden, the crowd started cheering. They were jumping up and down. And I looked around, and I don't know what was happening. It looked like the Knicks were coming back. And I remember it was Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Oscar Robertson, Bobby Dandridge, to name a few that were in that game.
Wow.
And I just remember they were so excited to go see Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. So I'm jumping up and down in the seat, and my father is not telling us to sit down. I said, you know what? I like it here. You can jump up and down. And come to find out years later, that was a game the Knicks came back with about 5 minutes left. And they scored 18 points from they came back from an 18-point deficit, their greatest comeback. So I realized that my brother and I were actually there. Later on that season, 1973, I'm watching the Knicks the whole season. I would see them beat the Celtics. I'd see them beat everybody. They're in the championship. The game is on the West Coast. I know the Knicks are going to win their final game, and they're going to be the champions. So I go into the living room, sit down. My father looks at me. He says, son, what are you doing? I said, I'm going to watch the Knicks win the championship. He said, no, you got school in the morning. Go to bed. You watch them win next year. Sadly to say, 53 years later, I'm still waiting for next year. And I actually thought and believed him that the Knicks would win the championship next year. Yep. Well, 74, they didn't make the playoffs. 75, 76. 70, and I'm looking, I said, there is no next year. There's no end in sight. The 80s, they lost to the Celtics after beating the Pistons with Bernard King. I thought they were going to win the championship with Bernard King. It didn't happen. I thought they were going to win the championship with Ewing. It didn't happen. Here I am. And I said, we're on the cusp, but it meant more. Where did the Knicks go wrong?
Well, we had a great time with my two kids at game three. That was a 20-point comeback, as you will remember. And it was a special moment to be there and to share that with them. Look, I think the Knicks reached, in my view, they reached their ceiling this year. And I think Coach Thibodeau has been fantastic for the organization. But as we started watching in the playoffs, their offense was very stagnant. And it became way too much one-on-one, way too much just talent bailing out the Knicks. And over time, that's just not a winning formula. I think Coach Tibbs gets a tremendous amount of credit for really bringing the Knicks to this point. But I do agree that we reached the ceiling with him. And I'm hoping that we get a new coach who instills an offensive scheme that gets Jalen Brunson open, that gets Karl Anthony Towns open more often, that has the two of them working together more, and that they play defense like they did in game five against the Pacers in Madison Square Garden, which is the team that they should be. And they have not played defense like that very much. So I think this is the beginning of a really positive run. I think we'll be right in it next year. And I think it's a great nucleus, and I'm excited for the season. It was a tremendous run. Obviously, the city was electric around the Knicks, and I'm already excited for next year.
That said, I hope 53 years is the end of this drought, and I could finally see the Knicks win the championship. But I told my kids, I was so upset. I'm telling you now, if the Knicks don't win a championship when your father's alive, when they do win that championship, put on my tombstone, my gravesite, they won the championship, Dad. Sorry you weren't here to see it. I'm waiting for that Knicks championship. And when I get that Knicks championship, it will replace these pictures.
There we go. There we go. Well, I will come over to hang it with you.
Thank you. Okay. So I'm going to say our time is up. You can come back anytime you want to come back. If you have something to say that you can't say anywhere else, you're free to come back and say it here.
Thank you so much, Greg. It's great to be with you.
You've been listening to Reaching Out. I'm Gregory Floyd, President of Local 237 Teamsters, a very special guest, Congressman Daniel Goldman. Thank you for coming on Reaching Out.
Thanks for listening. And don't forget to tune in again each and every Saturday at this same time for another edition of Reaching Out with Gregory Floyd, President of Teamsters Local 237. The preceding pre-recorded program paid for by Teamsters Local 237.